Hey everyone, this is BT, and before we get into today's content episode, I just wanted to let you know that the quality of today's audio is going to be a little bit different than what you're accustomed to when we record in our studio, mainly because the content you're going to hear is from a recent call that David did with one of his groups. The content was so good, it had to be shared. We just hope that the quality of it doesn't throw you off too much. So with that said, let's go ahead and get to the episode.
Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Let's take a look at this is how we gain mastery over anything in our life. It is taking you through different levels of awareness. So basically there's seven levels of awareness as it pertains to mastery. And the lowest one is an animal or a survival awareness. And the highest one is mastery. So I'll take you through them. Low being number one. So you have animal or survival. Then you have mass consciousness. Then you have aspiration. Then you have individual or what we would call self-awareness. Discipline is number five. Experience is number six. And seven is mastery. So now I'm going to take you through these and tell you how to use it in any area of your life that you are looking to master. So generally, if we come from our basic genetic DNA and going through life as a human being, most people are operating, bouncing back and forth between animalistic behavior, which is survival behavior, and mass consciousness. That's number one and number two. So animalistic behavior is purely based on survival. It's survival instinct. It does not have the ability to really see much into the future. It makes decisions on the here and now. It is a pleasure-seeking, pain-avoiding, decision-making, what's important now type of a mindset. From there, we move up to what we call a mass consciousness. So this is basically where we have people believing what everybody else around them believes, but for no reason other than it's like safety in numbers. Everybody else believes this. This is what everybody else is doing, or this is what everybody else is not doing. So I feel safe in actually doing that, in being in the mass consciousness. There's a really great book that was written by Eric Hoffer. It's called The True Believer. Everybody should get that book, and you should read it and study. And basically, it's a study in beliefs that are carried in mass consciousness, and how those occur, how they change, what is the danger in them. It's a pretty fascinating book. Again, it's called True Believer. And it's by Eric Hoffer. It's not a very big book either. You can get through it, you know, in a few hours. So anyway, mass consciousness is where everybody basically believes the same thing. We're raised to be safe based on mass consciousness. So that's why beliefs from a societal perspective are very much the same. Beliefs from a working class perspective are very much the same. Beliefs from a middle class mediocrity perspective are very much the same. You'll find that mass consciousness flows through societies. It flows through religions. It flows through education. It flows through employment. It flows through different areas of the country, different areas of the world. And it has a hierarchy to it. So that means that Like, let's say that a person lives in New York. Well, there's mass consciousness on every level in New York. You can go all the way down to the extreme poverty of homeless people to the some of the richest people in the world, and you'll find that at every level, there's a different level of mass conscious beliefs within that hierarchy. So where we move from that, first off, it's understanding that a lot of the beliefs that we carry are from a mass conscious perspective. Like, a lot of people believe that this is true, but that's not necessarily so. So in order to move from mass consciousness upward, the thing that pulls us out of mass consciousness, the safety of that realm, is the next level, number three, which is aspiration. When you aspire or are inspired to be, do, or have something different. So when we have aspiration, when we aspire to be something else, that is kind of the acknowledgement of the desire that is within every person. And through the acknowledgement of that, it's telling us to go in a different direction. It's telling us or suggesting that we break away from the mass consciousness of whatever idea we're thinking about, and we begin to chart our own course. So if we follow the aspiration, it leads us to the next level, which is the individual or self-awareness. Self-awareness is, it's really one of the major keys to freedom. Because if we can get ourselves up to the individual level of self-awareness, then what that starts to tell us is who we really are. What do we really desire? What do we want? I recommend that people once or twice a year take a little bit of time away by yourself and give your life a real good examination, every area of your life, and ask yourself, am I living the way that I really want to be living in my life? And you got to give yourself permission to break out of the mass consciousness when it comes to this question, because here's the thing, if there's any kind of fear that you've got going on that will not allow you to move into the aspiration of wanting something else, you know, like let's say you're in a tough marriage, you're having marital problems, and you want a better sex life, or you want to go start a business, but your spouse doesn't want to go start a business. But you start to deny those things that you want because you don't want to ruffle the marriage or jeopardize the family or something. You immediately go back down to mass conscious. You don't stay up in the idea of self-awareness. So you're denying yourself what needs you have to get met. It's a very dangerous thing to do. Because a lot of times what happens is people get frustrated, like they bounce back and forth between mass conscious, they feel the aspiration, they start to get up around the self-awareness, and then, of course, the next step after self-awareness is discipline, where we start to actually put it in the action, but they don't get that high because fear sets in, and they go back down, they try to go back down anyway to the safety of mass conscious. Well, if a person does that a lot without ever breaking through to the next level toward mastery, eventually they get frustrated and they just want to quit trying. So that's where a person loses hope. They lose their dream. They give up. They just say, fuck it. You know, I can't do this anymore. They get very, very frustrated with it. So self-awareness is very important, that we spend time around being aware of our needs, our wants, our desires, our dreams, our hopes, you know, all of those different things that make up who we are as an individual. And as we become aware of it, that we're giving ourselves permission to take action on being, doing, or having those things. And that's where we move out of individual into discipline. So the interesting thing about discipline is that discipline The etymology of the word comes from the word disciple, which means to be a student of. So you have to ask yourself, what kind of connotation do you have in your mind around the idea of discipline? Because very often people have a negative one. Like, if I was disciplined as a child, if my father spanked me or my mother slapped me with a spoon, or they degraded me or made me stay in my room, or I got grounded, what is your interpretation of that word? What is your mental association with the word? So I'd like to try to change that by letting you know that, again, it comes from the etymologies from disciple, which means to be a student of. So we go from individual to discipline. What we're really saying is we're going to be a student of ourselves. We're going to be a student of life. We are going to be a student of self-awareness. That means accepting what it is that we want, and then going out and we work on starting to develop that. We also make decisions at the place of discipline to start enacting our own self-awareness. So that is acknowledging our needs, our wants, our desires, and then taking action on those things. When we do that, we move up to experience. Experience is where we get feedback. That is cause and effect. It's action, reaction. It's energy always returns to its source of origination. It's all of that stuff in the cause and effect, in the law of cause and effect. It allows you to get feedback on the actions that you're taking, and it gives you a couple of things. One, it says, am I taking the right action to get the desired result that I had as I was becoming self-aware? The other one is that, am I actually enjoying or liking whatever it is that I'm doing in taking that action? Because in any action that you take, you generally have you have the process of the action, and then you have the result of the action. So that's two very different things. It is pretty habitual for most people to look at the result of the action and say, I want that result, but they don't understand the process, and then they get into the process and they find out they don't like the process. I see it would happen with business people all the time. They want to be multimillionaires and have the freedom of their own business, but the process, everything that they do day to day, they hate it. They don't like it. So those people are better off working for being really great and working for someone else, because they don't like the process of actually owning their own business. But keep in mind, it can literally be with anything, absolutely anything. You've got a process, and then you have whatever the result is that you're getting. So you want to make sure that you enjoy the process, and then it's about allowing the feedback of that process to say, what else am I self-aware about? What else do I enjoy? What processes do I actually enjoy? What do I like? What resonates with me? What processes do I want to grow? The other thing is that processes where you spend that time where you're trading your life for whatever the process is. Now, yes, it's in order to get an end result, but if you don't love the process, then really you're trading your life for something that most of the time what you're doing, you don't really love it. So that's not a good idea either. But again, it goes back to self-awareness, because you're becoming more aware of your likes, your dislikes, your needs, your wants. What's worth it to you and what's not worth it to you. And then as you get that feedback, we become better at doing what we're doing. And it's through the feedback and the adjustments that we make that eventually we hit mastery. We hit mastery really when we get the place of where I know. It's I know that I know, and I can duplicate the result and the process, at will, so to speak. We want to stay in a place with this where we're in, observation, so to speak. So observation means asking yourself, what is true around all of this? What is the truth that I'm actually experiencing with everything? The feedback that we're getting as we're moving up towards mastery is going to indicate various different things. The feedback will also be your reality in that moment. So if we get into judgment in that moment, we're not seeing the truth. We're then using our perception in a way that limits us. So we want to stay in observation. Observation allows us to stay in a place until we can perceive the entire truth about that thing or the process or whatever it is, the result, whatever it is that we're being, doing, or having. Observation is what allows us to be able to then see the entire truth of it versus just a partial piece of the reality that we're getting as, you know, some kind of instantaneous feedback. Remember, judgment is weakness. If we move into judgment, we move into seeing only one part, then that creates further judgment, and then we end up going backwards. If you think about it like this, when you get to the place where you're getting experience, if it's something that your awareness said that you really wanted, but the feedback that you were getting was not good, and unbeknownst to you, the feedback's not good because you're in a place of judgment, then it's very easy for us to make a judgment and go all the way back down to mass consciousness. Because if you're doing that and it's not good and you've got that judgment, you're not even going to want to hang around the aspiration part because you end up in disappointment. You know, like the opposite, it's almost like it's an opposite thing. You're not inspired or aspired to do something. You're disappointed because you thought it was going to have a different outcome, but it didn't. And the reason that it didn't was because you're using judgment instead of observation about what you're doing. So observation is a very good tool that also allows us to kind of make a transition all the way complete. For instance, when you're in the process and you're actually getting feedback in this moment, you might find that, let's say you set a goal for yourself, but you're not reaching the entire goal. You thought you were going to reach the entire goal. You thought you were going to get the total end result, but you only have part of it. And you think to yourself, oh, this didn't work. Well, that would be a judgment, not an observation. If we go to, oh, it didn't work, we could easily go back down to disappointment. If we go back down to disappointment, we're going to go right below aspiration back into mass consciousness. So the idea is that we have to move out of the idea of the judgment and look at the observation and say, you know, wait a second, this is actually part of the whole, even if it's not working in the process. I'm getting feedback. It's not exactly what I wanted, but in some way it's part of what I do want. So if I take in the entire view of that, I have to ask myself, what parts of this need adjusting, need correction, maybe need a different process in order for me to bring in the entire thing I want? And then that, you know, we really end up there in mastery. So when we talk about money, Wallace Waddell said something that is that's really great. He said, to look upon the appearance of poverty will produce corresponding forms in your own mind. Instead, you must hold to the truth that there is no poverty, there is only abundance. So when you think about it like this, when you're looking at poverty, you're number one, you're in judgment. Your perception is only looking at one side of things. It takes away your aspiration. You lose that. You're very much on the edge of losing hope. And it knocks you back down to mass consciousness because you're not seeing the whole truth. Observation will allow you to see the entire truth, which is abundance. But if it's only a partial experience, you can still see the whole thing, but now you know where to work. And that's one of the greatest things ever, because it also allows us to measure progress. And I see people make a big mistake when they are setting goals and working towards those goals, but they're not measuring their progress that they're making. All they're looking at are the difficulties, the mistakes, the losses, what they didn't actually do. And they convince themselves that nothing's working in their mind. It becomes like all or nothing thinking, and they go into doom and gloom at that moment, which then would have them go back down to mass consciousness. So remember it like this. We're going from animal to mass consciousness to aspiration to self-awareness to discipline to experience, which is where we get the feedback, and then we get ourselves up to mastery. And when we do that, we're in a place where things are moving forward at a pretty good clip. So you can literally take any area of your life in the self-awareness stage, and you could look at it and you could ask yourself, based on the seven levels of mastery, where am I with this? Because you may be close to mastery in one area, and in another area, you're living kind of a hand-to-mouth, animalistic type of a nature. A person can, very often they can do it with something of the same or similar nature. You'll see people do it with business sometimes, where in the proactive things that they're doing with their business, they're getting really good results. But in reactive things, like after they make money, then if they're not managing that correctly, they could be living in kind of like a fight or flight mode and literally spending all of their money right away. And then they got to go back out and they have to make 100 sales tomorrow instead of really getting to the place where they can master, where they're mastering the money all the way through. Because I've seen people master the bringing in of money, but they're really living at a very low level when it comes to spending it, because they can't seem to hold on to it to save their life, so to speak. So it's about really asking yourself, where am I in all of these areas? And then you understand the different levels of moving yourself up towards the idea of mastery. And the other thing is that one of the things that I think is important to know to do this, to work towards mastery, is that the lower you are on this scale, the more confusion and chaos that you're going to have in your life. The further up you go on the scale, the more order you bring into your life. So I'm going to read you something that I think is very important. So it's by two different authors. One is by Ralph Waldo Emerson. So I'm going to read you this one first. And this is the representation of what chaos would look like. The average individual's mind is busily engaged in a hodgepodge of totally unrelated ideas, the likes of which you would have difficulty finding outside of a common encyclopedia. Their mind is being dazzled through their senses by moving objects, flashy colors, wild and weird sounds. Order, vision, and focus are near impossible because of the mental state that they permit themselves to be in during their waking hours. They believe themselves to be a physical thing in a world of things. They're clutched by an unseen enemy. The lack and the limitation being expressed in their present results have captured their conscious control. They concentrate all of their mental energy on their limited supply, thereby creating more of the same. The only thing that can grow is the thing that you give energy to, okay? So that is chaos. Now, James Allen said this. Now, this is order, okay? Calmness of mind is one of the beautiful jewels of wisdom. It is the result of long and patient effort in self-control. Its presence is an indication of ripened experience and of a more than ordinary knowledge of the laws and the operations of thought. A man becomes calm in the measure that he understands himself as a thought-evolved being, for such knowledge necessitates the understanding of others as the result of thought, and as he develops a right understanding and sees more and more clearly the internal relations of things by the action of cause and effect. He ceases to fuss and fume and worry and grieve, and he remains poised, steadfast, and serene. So, as they both talked about with experience, that when you reach the experience level, how you're dealing with that from a cause and effect standpoint, how you're looking at the process, how you're interpreting the feedback, really determines whether you remove the chaos and you move into mastery, where it's order or calmness, or do you go back down to mass consciousness? Mass consciousness and survival, the bottom one, there's a lot of chaos down there, a lot of problems, a lot of drama. So it's consistently moving yourself up until you get to mastery.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.